Are you working on your author career but struggling to get that first book published? Does the goal of being an author seem too lofty? Or are thoughts of having multiple books and making a full-time living are as fantastical as living in Cinderella's castle? Welcome to Discovered Wordsmiths, a podcast where aspiring authors can be heard. Join Stephen Schneider as he finds and talks to authors you may not know, but authors that have gotten their foot on the author career path. Hear what they've done to get there and where they want to go now. Settle back. It's time for a bit of inspiration and advice. Come listen to today's Discovered Wordsmith.
Doug, welcome back once again. Since this is focused for writers, tell us a little bit about the software and the services that you used when you were writing the book.
Well, I happened upon a Readzy. I'm not really sure. I probably just did a search and found it, and I used that actually as the writing tool because I was able to then publish in the different formats that I needed to send it on to Amazon for the self-publishing for the Kindle direct publishing. I mentioned to you earlier, I used my daughter was my editor. My son was my graphic artist, and the rest of it was kind of just, you know, shoestring stuff. Nothing fancy, Stephen.
Okay. Nice. But that's great because you can make a good quality product, even if you're not spending thousands of dollars.
Exactly. You don't even need a word processor. It's all online if that's the way you want to do it. If you're comfortable with a word processor or whatever, I'm sure that works just fine. But you don't even need the word processor.
Right. So when we were talking a little bit about marketing, you mentioned your target audience. And I loved that because I mentioned I also do middle grade fiction. And it is difficult because you want to write a book and you want to give it to the 7th and 8th graders, but they are not the ones buying it. The parents are the ones buying it, and the teachers, and you mentioned grandparents, that you get a lot of grandparents. So what are you doing to try and reach that audience?
I've had pretty good success targeting grandparents on Facebook. And being a car dealer and knowing a little marketing, I know that demographic uses Facebook, and especially, you know, the last 6 weeks during the Christmas season, that was really surprisingly successful for me. I've used some of the Amazon ads kind of targeting some books that had the same subject matter, had some reasonable success there as well. And then, you know, I've given away some books. I put a little card in there asking people to go online and give me a review, and to recommend it. And, word of mouth is still a pretty darn good way to advertise.
Yes. And so I take it, even though you are on Amazon, that you actually probably sell quite a few printed books.
Yeah. The vast majority of my books are printed, of the sales are printed books. And I think, again, when you think about the target end reader, the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade boy, not many of them are running around with an electronic reader. Most of them are, if they're going to read it, I think they're going to read the paper version of the book.
Agreed. And of course, if you're talking grandparents, there's probably I guess that's the funny thing. You would think, oh, I'm talking about grandparents, so they're probably going to want a printed book, but the demographics I've seen show that there are more people 50 and above using Kindle and readers,
right,
than younger people. Right. So yeah. Again, it comes back to that. You're marketing to these one set of people that read ebooks and hoping they'll buy a printed book to give to a younger set. That's
right.
A different demographic.
Exactly. Yeah. It's kind of counterintuitive, but it is what it is.
Yeah. So And this is coming into our big discussion. And I love this because you saw a need to help boys, young boys in middle school. And it caught my interest because I was kind of in the same boat. I was in Boy Scouts back in the 80s and I loved it. And I learned a lot of my man lessons there. I learned how to cook. I learned how to clean after cooking and burning it sometimes. Mm-hmm. I know how to change oil and check my tires. And my wife would argue, I usually try and hold the door open for a lady. She's probably got a story about that, I'm sure. So, you saw a need though in your community for these types of skills. And I said, when I got into the leadership aspect, when I was with a Cub Master, Scout Master with my son, I saw a great decline in Boy Scouts and what they were teaching the boys and expecting of the boys. So what you saw a general need, and you started this club. Just tell us a little bit about that whole thought at that time, what you were seeing, and your son was part of that group, what you wanted to teach all these boys.
Yeah. So I had been working with young men for, you know, probably 15 years already by then, coaching, like I said, teaching religious ed and whatnot. And one of the things that I saw through my experiences was the need for young men. And I'm sure this may be to a certain degree young ladies as well. I just hadn't worked with them like I had young men, but the need to be on a team, to wear a team uniform and belong. And I think that need is so strong. It's one of the reasons you see gangs in the inner city. They have to be on some kind of a team where they're working towards a common goal. The goal can be a noble one, or it can be a less than desirable one. And so my idea, and the other thing I'd seen is that kids will do virtually anything at that age that you ask them to do if they can do it with their friends. Their friends are so important to them. And so I kind of tried to combine those two concepts. Here we're gonna put together a group for young guys. We're gonna get these shirts. You know, and you wear this shirt with pride because it means that you're doing good things in the community. And then we're going to go out and we're going to raise some money for a good cause. And I had no specifics in mind as I started that, Stephen. And then once you get started down the path, it's almost like writing a book. Once you get started down the path, you see opportunities, you see needs. We saw things that the young guys could do that would be appreciated in the community and would cast them in a positive light, which is always good for adolescent boys, because I think for a lot of people, when they see a group of four or five or six young men together, they think there goes trouble. You know, I mean, I think we've been programmed to think that in our culture, which is unfortunate. But so we started down this path and we had a wonderful experience the first year. And I want to just take a second and tell you about it because I think it really launched this organization. I did not really know what I was going to do with this group of boys, but I did know some people in state government. And in South Dakota, the state government is small enough that you can load up a group of kids and you can go up and watch the government in action. You can meet legislators, you can even meet the governor. You can meet other elected officials. And so I thought, you know, let's do that. I got 25 kids this first year. Let's get a few parents. We're going to load up cars. We're going to take a day off from school. The school has been so supportive and helpful throughout the 20 years of this club. And so we went up there to the state capitol, and they were introduced to the legislature and happened to know the governor at the time. And so we got an appointment with the governor and they got their picture taken. And as we're sitting around the governor's office, he invited the boys into his office, took a picture. He said, "Oh, tell me about the explorers." And one of the kids pipes up and says, "Well, we help people." And he says, "Well, you help people. What do you help them with?" And so one of the kids says, "Well, we're going to help the city build a softball field." Our community was trying to build a softball complex, and we committed to trying to help raise a little money toward that end. And so the governor loved that. He said, "You're going to help your community build a softball field. That's wonderful." tell me what you're going to do, or how much you're going to give them. We hadn't even talked about it. I thought if we could give $1,000 to the cause, that would be a pretty good contribution. And one of the kids says, $5,000. We're going to give $5,000. And I'm like, what? And the governor and I knew each other, and he looked at me and he just ate that up, winked at me. He said, well, I'll tell you what, guys, that's wonderful. If you guys raise $5,000 for your community, I'm going to match it. I've got a fund that I can match it up. And the kids are all high-fiving each other. They're high-fiving the governor. He's loving this, right? So, the kids go out in the hall. We're going on to our next appointment, whatever it was. And I said, thanks a lot. And he said, you'll get her done. You know, so kind of pat me on the shoulder, you'll get it done. Well, that was in January. And by the end of the school year was the challenge. So, you know, I looked at a whole bunch of different ways that we could raise some money. And I finally landed on, we're going to do a wash-a-thon with cars. We called it the Explorers versus Dirty Cars. The boys went out and took pledges, and then we washed the cars for free. And it was the first week of May, it was the last Saturday before school got out. The boys washed, I think it was 75 cars, and they had raised a little bit of money with a memorabilia auction before. I think they raised like $4,100 on this car wash. And wow. And we got to $5,100 and we made the bogey. So the next day, the Monday after the car wash, I called the governor's office and asked to speak to the governor. He picked up and I said, well, you won't believe this, but the boys had a car wash over the weekend and they get all the money collected. It's going to put them over the top. I think they're going to be at $5,100. And he said, well, that's great. And I said, so what do you think? You want to send a check down, or what do you think? And he said, no. He said, I want to come down and present it to him. And I'm like, what? Yeah. I want to come down and present it to him. So, he said, do you think we could kind of put together a little assembly or something? Well, our middle school principal had two boys in the program. So I thought that there was pretty good chance that I could get her to put something together. And she did. And so it was the very next day. On that Tuesday, the governor flew down. I went up to get him at the airport. And he had this, you know, oversized check for pictures, like, and he kept hiding it. You know, he wouldn't let me see it. So we walk into the gymnasium where all the kids are, and the kids give him a big hand, and the chorus plays or sings a couple songs, and the band plays a song. And then I stand up in front of everybody and I kind of tell the story that I just told to you. And then I introduce the governor, and the governor tells his version of the story I just told to you, which I have to tell you was pretty hilarious, right? Because he picked up on all the little nuances of the boys and whatnot, and described it to a T. But he said, you know, he said, this is one of the coolest things I've ever been around. He said, we got, you know, Native American kids working next to non-Native American kids, white kids. It doesn't matter. They didn't know the difference. They were working together on a team towards a common goal. And he said, I love that. So he said, what I decided to do is I'm going to double up. And he pulls out his check and he says, I brought $10,000 down here to present to you. So the Explorers will have $15,000 to give to the city of Chamberlain for the softball field. And the whole, you know, the kids are, all the boys are standing up there with their shirts on and they're high-fiving each other. The governor goes down the line and he's high-fiving everybody. And all the kids in the audience are high-fiving and they're standing and they're cheering and the teachers and everything. And, you know, Stephen, after that, I couldn't have messed that whole program up. It was the governor helped to launch it so successfully that it would have been hard for me to mess it up after that point.
That is such a good story, Doug. And I think the things you're doing in your community just by this one thing, it's incredible. It's too often people are like, well, what can I do? What difference can I make? There's so many things you can do. You don't have to think that you're going to work and you're going to have to give money. You're helping these boys, which then helps the community.
So that you bring up a really good point. And if there's anything that your listeners got from our conversation, I'd just like to give them a little food for thought. I am one who appreciates people who donate money. I think, you know, those who have the resources to donate, God bless them. And I've done some fundraising and I appreciate all that. But I think the one thing to remember is that we're all equal in the respect that we all have 24 hours in every day. And what we do with that 24 hours, how we spend it, is essentially how we decide what our priorities are. And so I think, you know, if you have a passion for something and you spend your time on that passion, that's how you commit. That's how you spend. And you can make a huge difference without ever giving a dollar to somebody just by spending time with them and dedicating time towards a cause.
And for the boys, you're giving them a purpose without hitting them over the head or without announcing, we have a purpose and this is why we do this. You're just teaching boys how to grow up and how to be men. And that's, and I told you I was in Boy Scouts, and that kind of was really the whole goal. When I would ask people, you know, what is the purpose of Boy Scouts? I would always get, well, to earn merit badges, well, to go camping, and on. I'm like, no. You're totally missing the point. The point of Boy Scouts is to turn young boys into young men and show them how to be an adult. Right. And the way we do it is by teaching them different skills. When I was in Scouts, it was very much mostly outdoor skills, camping and leadership and helping others and all of that. And it's progressed a little bit. And some of those skills are making video games or programming computers. But the whole point still is to teach them how to be men and adults and grow up. And the people that miss that point didn't understand what Scouts was. A lot of those parents, well, I just have my son in here so he can get Eagle and put that on his resume. They didn't care. They didn't care what it was about. We would have Memorial Day services, and I would tell the boys, okay, one of your things you have to get signed off is a flag raising ceremony. Well, that's Memorial Day. So show up for Memorial Day, walk in the parade, and raise the flag. And I told parents, look, the first year or two that they're in Scouts, commit to doing this and do it, and they can earn that and earn the pride. There were parents that resisted, that refused to go to the parade, refused to have their boys in it. And then, unfortunately, some of the other leaders that didn't get it either just said, well, come here. And they said, come over here and raise the flag. Okay, we'll sign it off. I'm like, well, that is not a ceremony.
Right.
So they really missed the point of what they were trying to be teaching the boys and what the boys were supposed to learn. It was really about, let me
check in the box.
Yes. Yeah. Missed that point.
Yeah.
And it's funny too, because you wrote a book, you did something and then you wrote a book, whereas Baden Powell, also started something and wrote the book, but now, I can't see parents going into Boy Scouts and then writing a book about things their boys learned, because that doesn't seem to be their focus.
Right.
And I think that's sad.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
You've got to push boys. You've got to have them do these things. That's what makes them grow.
One of the rewarding things about working with these young guys is, sometimes you just don't know. I liken it to throwing seeds out there. You don't know which ones hit the concrete and which ones bounce off the concrete into fertile soil. But at some point, with virtually every young man I've had the opportunity to work with over the last 20 years, I can see where there was a connection. You know, they whether they finally figured out that, you know, not only am I, you know, after school with my buddy helping rake leaves for this, you know, this older couple that maybe wouldn't otherwise get their leaves raked. I'm helping people. And it's that, you know, not everybody is born with leadership skills, but servant leadership is something that anybody can do. You know, do the right thing, help people, and others will follow. And even if they don't, you're still a leader.
Yes. And the leadership is extremely important. And that's one of the things I liked about Boy Scouts was you were having the boys be leaders and do the things. The boys elected their own leaders, and that boy would lead their group. And they would be the ones to make sure all the camping equipment is ready and make sure every boy had warm, dry socks on and stuff like that. And nowadays, from what I've seen, that doesn't happen. They elect the boy leader so it can get signed off in his book, but the parents and adults do everything and take care of everything, including cooking.
Exactly. And part of the great leadership experience is making a mistake. I mean,
yes,
the great lessons that I've learned in my life were made were mistakes I made, you know? And my kids, if my kids could hear me say this, they'd laugh at me, because I always tell them, learn from others' mistakes, because you're not going to live long enough to make all the mistakes yourself, you know? But if you never let kids go to make the mistakes, they won't learn those lessons.
Right. The boy that can teach anything the best is the one that screwed it up when he was trying to learn it.
Exactly.
I saw it every time. A great example I had was they all need to get cooking merit badge, and there's also other cooking requirements just to move up in rank. So I had this wonderful idea. Why don't we have a camp out and we make it an Iron Chef cookout, that Saturday breakfast, lunch, and dinner, the patrols would plan a lavish meal for each one of those three meals, something unique, different, whatever, and they would have to cook it. And then the adults would go through and judge. And I had a parent yelling and arguing with me that it's ridiculous, that, what if they wanted to make biscuits? They don't know how to make biscuits. They've never made biscuits. So it's ridiculous of me to expect them to. I'm like, that's the whole point. Let them learn. Let them figure it out. Or let them ask how to do it and beforehand to get taught how to do it. That's the point. And they yelled and argued with me. And I'm like, you totally don't get it, do you? And the thing was, I knew deep in my heart, I was the one doing the right thing. But because the other people didn't understand it, it made it look like I was the one wrong. And I was right. The idiot, I guess.
You know, it would be appropriate for me to tell you that how fortunate I have been through the 20 years of my Explorers program to have such support from parents and grandparents. And a kind of a hands-off approach, you know, but when I need like drivers, we continue to go up to Pierre to the state government every year. At the end of the year, we go to Minneapolis or Kansas City or Denver to see a couple of Major League Baseball games, kind of as a reward. But I always get volunteers to drive and to help chaperone dances, all that kind of stuff. So I've been really fortunate in the respect that I haven't had parents meddle with the program. It's the boys program. I don't like it to be called anything that is my possession. You know, it's Explorers. I'm the advisor. I help with an agenda. I help them do their thing. But I want it to be the boys program for the reasons that you just suggested, because they learn. They learn from their mistakes. They learn from their successes. And if you got somebody that's leading them around, making sure they do the right thing or they don't make mistakes, they don't learn near as much. But I've had wonderful support. Wonderful support.
That's and those boys remember those lessons. I mean, like we were talking about with changing oil or checking a tire, those are things they may not use very much in today's world, but they do know how to do it. And there's a self-confidence that it builds. So when they come up against something they don't know how to do, they have the confidence to figure it out or to try or to go forward. They're, right. You know, I've said, because I have a talk that I've been working on giving on how the work world is changing and how to prepare our kids now for the work world of tomorrow. And one of the things I say is kids need to go climb trees, because I had some of my kids' friends that came over and they were afraid to climb a tree. And I'm like, that right there sums it up to me as to something we need to teach our kids. Go climb a tree. Get outside, right. Climb a tree and see if you break your arm. Right. And that sounds like, I know there are parents that would listen to this and like condemn me for child abuse or whatever, because I said kids might break their arm when they climb a tree. But
it is a metaphor for you know, the helicopter parents that we have. You know, I mean, again, I know it's a different world than the one that I grew up in, but man, I had some Huck Finn type experiences growing up, and I learned a lot from it. I learned a lot from bloody knees and from broken bones and that kind of stuff, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, just a teaser, I could tell you about the wood that ended up in the eggnog. I could tell you about the fencing that got knocked over because my head hit it because the burrow drugged me through it.
There you go. So, yeah. Yeah. I can relate.
And to bring it kind of back down to writing, again, You wrote this book based on your life, on your experiences, on a need you saw in the community. I think sometimes people disregard their own knowledge and skills and things that they know how to do that seem easy to them or things they've been doing a long time. They think that nobody else needs to know how to do it or everybody already does. But there's a lot of things out there that people could write about in their own voice and teach others and put it in a book.
Yeah. I agree with that completely. You know, you pick up the book that I wrote and you look at it, and every chapter is something that most adult, certainly men, and probably most women already know. I have heard that I include some details and some other, you know, maybe little extras that they don't otherwise get. But what I did do that I think kind of brings it home to people is I tried to sprinkle in some personal anecdotes from as I grew up, or stories from some of the story I told you about the governor coming down and presenting a check. That's in my chapter that introduces my chapter on goal setting and the importance of working together toward a goal and whatnot. But it's a great story and it's a success and it really, you know, makes for a good way to show how important working on goals is, working on goals together is and whatnot. So again, I tried to, you know, make it a little bit more interesting by sharing these stories that go, you know, that kind of match up with the lesson that I'm trying to teach.
And I love, I guess, let me phrase it this way. I see that you could have written this book in two different ways. You could have written a book as a guidebook for parents who have young boys, and you could have done this and teach them this and do this. But you didn't do it that way. You chose to put it in a voice written directly to the younger crowd. And I think that's also a choice many authors need to look at and make, is what would get your message across the best. And even though some would argue, well, the parents are for teaching the boys, so write this to guide the parents and show them what to do. But you didn't. You left it kind of in the boys' hands to read the book and learn these things. Did you consciously think of that? Or
I did do that, Stephen. And I, as I, you know, as I'd write a chapter, that one of the times that I read through it, I made a conscious effort not to be preachy to the young men. Because they hate that. I know they hate that. They don't like to be talked down to. So again, I wanted to make it conversational. But yet I found that as I wrote it that way, again, thinking of that single mother who has such a difficult challenge in raising a young man anyway, let alone teaching these skills or ideas that, you know, she may never have been taught because she was a young lady at one point rather than a young man. Maybe using this as a guide or a start for a little visit about some of these things. So, do you know how to do this, that, or whatever? Well, here, take a look in this book, read about it, and maybe we can talk about it. You know, that kind of thing. So I tried to bring those two ideas together to make it, you know, very conversational to a young man, but also allow, you know, not just a single mom, parents can use it as well, but it's the young man can sit down and read it. He doesn't need somebody to preach to him.
Right. And I like that. A thought that just popped into my head. Have you thought of writing a companion book that's maybe a smaller thing or whatever for parents that goes into why you have a certain section or what the boys are learning in this section, but it's written for the parent as a additional thing so they can maybe help guide the boys that may struggle or have problems? Because someone in Florida that's never going to meet you, you know, it may be helpful. Just a thought. Have you thought of anything like that?
I'm making a note as you say that. I'd also had a suggestion that I would maybe create a journal type of book where there could be a lesson and then they could kind of add their thoughts on the lesson and how they applied it to their life or whatever it might be. So, geez, You're going to make an author out of me yet, Stephen.
Well, that's kind of funny you say that, because I do another podcast with a friend and we talk about lots of nerd and geek type stuff, pop culture and that. Yeah. And one of his goals this year is to write a book. I said, well, just let me know. I've got an overwhelming amount of podcasts and websites and other books for you to read. But I think that's one of the also exciting things in today's world. I have a friend who writes sci-fi. He's been published for 35 years. And he was writing a series of books. And after he wrote the first one, he was writing the second one. The publisher said, hey, this is not selling that well, so we're not going to do another one after the second book. So he went, oh man, it had to like change all of book two and end things and just cut, you know, tie up all the loose ends. Then book two came out and book one and two both took off and sold really well. And the publisher said, well, hey, why don't you write a third or more, you know, write a whole series. Yeah. And he like was stupefied. He's like, well, I just kind of, you know, screwed myself up because I now closed all of that down with self-publishing. You have the choice, you know, so what if your book only sells 100? If you got the book out there you wanted, and right, the way you want, and you still have that option to keep going and add to it. And there's so many things, because I this is probably not anything you want to do, but you could probably create a course that's online for boys to take and go through it and be you with your face and talking, teaching these lessons just the way you do it with your boys right there in town.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, as an author, there's so many things you can do and keep going with a book like this. A workbook, a second book, doing a book for girls, or, you know, something along those lines.
It's ironic. I have two daughters and a son, and I did the book for the boys, but I'd need a lot of help doing the one for the girls.
And I bet though, you could probably find an author that is kind of thinking the same, and you probably could co-author something.
Collaborate, sure. Yeah. Certainly.
You never know. I mean, if you get tired of cars.
Well, there are days that that's the case. I
bet. Well, if I ever get out your way, I'm going to stop at your dealership and we'll have to meet some of these boys and see some of these get-togethers you guys have for your group. I'd love to meet them and see how things go.
Oh, I would love that. I have to tell you, this morning we had a meeting at 7:30 in our lesson this morning. When we learn how to tie ties, we have to spend two whole meetings because it's not something you can do in 10 minutes. And so here we were this morning. We had the guys tying a double overhand knot, and then next week we'll work on the Windsor knot. And it's so much fun. It really is fun. I look forward to that every week. It's the high point of my week.
Well, I know, I can still start a fire without gas, paper, and with only two matches, and I can still tie like 12 different knots behind my back. So it's important to learn these skills, and they stay with you.
Absolutely. Yeah, I made the comment this morning, Boy Scouts tie knots and explorers tie ties, and there's a difference and a place for both.
Right. Well, you know, there's probably some good knots to integrate, because I cringe when I see people trying to tie something and they just keep doing 20 million overhand knots and twist it around as if that makes it better.
I don't know if you remember, I told you I'm a sailor, so you know I've got a good appreciation for knots.
There we go. Good. Can you tie it behind your back?
No, I always tie it looking at it.
That was just our challenge.
Of course.
Which is another great thing. You know, boys challenge each other and push each other.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that feeds on itself.
It sure does. Yep.
Great. Well, to tie things up here, do you have any last minute advice you'd say? I know we talked about this a bit on the last part of the podcast, but any last minute advice to an author that may be wanting to write a book for boys?
You know, I guess it depends if you're writing to boys as the audience, tell stories. I think all young people, but especially young men, love to hear stories. And, you know, the lesson can be in the story. And I think there have been a lot of very skillful authors that have figured that out. But my experience is that, if you can tell a story wrapped around a lesson, that the lesson hits home a lot better.
I love that. That's great. Hey, one last real quick question personally. You said you teach Sunday school and things. Do you incorporate some of the religious lessons into your Explorer group?
Well, you know, I'm a Christian. I'm Catholic. I pretty much everything that I do with the boys is, I guess, the foundational is Christian. I like to incorporate the Christian ideals in everything I teach the boys. Again, I don't want to be preachy. At the end of the day, you know, treat people right, do the right thing, and everything will work out. So, you know, from that standpoint, I do try to incorporate that. Usually, all the young men that are in my religious ed class are in the Explorers group, so they get a double dose of me. They're probably pretty sick and tired of me by the time they're done with eighth grade.
Well, I know Boy Scouts encouraged religious beliefs, but they didn't dictate one way or the other. And there were, you could earn a religious award for whatever your beliefs were. And they always did try to have a service on Sunday when you were at camp, but they tried to keep it as open as possible. And I'll tell you, I have a very hard time enjoying any type of religious service nowadays, or even feeling, I guess, as close to the maker, God, or whatever you want term, as I did when I was younger, and sitting in a forest on the side of a mountain, watching the shadow from our mountain go down the mountain across from us while somebody was reading some scriptures out of the Bible. There's just no other experience like that.
Well, in my religious ed class, one of the questions that when we're talking about the first commandment, I ask the boys when they feel closest to God. And before I ask them to answer, I tell them that the time that I feel closest to God is when I'm sitting on the side of the hill watching the sunset over the Missouri River here in central South Dakota. Maybe I've got orange on and I'm hunting deer, or I'm hunting geese, or maybe I'm just, you know, sitting out there. But there's nothing like God's majesty of nature to bring it home to you.
Absolutely. Totally agree. I wish more people would experience that type of feeling. I think there'd be some less problems in the world.
I agree.
Well, Doug, I appreciate you taking so much time to talk to me today. It's been a great topic, and your book is great. I'm going to go check it out on Amazon as soon as we're done here. I think my youngest, who's in middle school, would probably love it.
Well, I appreciate that, Stephen. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you. I've enjoyed our visit immensely.
Great. Well, Doug, it was wonderful talking to you, and I wish you luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Discovered Wordsmiths. Come back next week and listen to another author discuss the road they've traveled, and maybe, sometime in the near future, it might be you.